And this was a fantastic presentation. And my question is, let's see, I'm having a little trouble formulating it. I have discovered that nearly all of the conflict on the face of the planet is male. You nearly said it in a half a dozen ways. I kept track of a lot of the things you said. My question is, isn't it true? Aren't you covering the fact? Did some of you see my article in which I said women have got to move into top management of every organization on the face of the planet before we solve conflict? We can solve conflict if we can get the female input. Would you accept that as a topping on your fantastic presentation?
I think you should run for Prime Minister.
comment on it.
I love your comment because I recently was at the YWCA
National Conference in Ontario a couple months back, and they had a journalist speaking who had traveled all over the world, and she has been in the war countries, and she talked about how women and children are the canaries of the coal mine. And when you have a country that uses women and children for wars of crime, who are disrespected, who have no value, who are murdered, you have a country that is falling apart. And maybe that helps clarify some of what you said, Howard.
Ed Barnock. Debbie, all those figures of how many people are killed, never mind beaten, including Lethbridge. And when you add the women and children together each year, it's astronomical for a civilized country like ours. And with all due respect to our army, we have had headlines, every news broadcast, for soldiers who go into a force knowing that death might be a possibility. But with the figures you've listed of defenseless women and children, you don't see this in the headlines. You don't see this on the front page. You don't see this on the newscast. And yet the figures you gave us are far more dramatic than what's happening with our soldiers who are trained and know that that is their mission. Where are we falling down in not making this a national issue?
At this time, I'd like to acknowledge some very wonderful people in the audience. They are working. They are your everyday workers that are dealing with issue. We have representatives from Lethbridge Family Services. Could you, Aletha and Colleen, could you please stand up? We have Michelle Montgomery from Alberta Services. We have Christine Casey, the CEO of YWCA. We have Diane Randall from City with Funding Services. We have Lorraine Stewart from Victim Services with the Calgary Police Service. I'm sorry, Lethbridge Police Service. Okay, I went on a memory relapse. I think every one of these people can give you a part of an answer to that question, is where are we falling down? Because they all work with different individuals within the system. I'm going to give you my opinion, and then if the others in the audience that have the expertise in their area would like to stand up, I really would welcome that. In my opinion, it is a lack of awareness, and it is the lack of courage to speak up. We don't want to deal with it, because why? It's ugly. It's like sexual abuse in children. We don't want to deal with it because it's ugly. It's like prostitution on the street. We don't want to deal with it because it's ugly. We don't want to deal with things that are ugly. We don't want to talk about it. So that, in my opinion, is we need to talk. And that's why I'm just so supportive of this November Family Violence Prevention Campaign about speak up. And the silence stopped the violence. Would one of the other members like to talk? One of the other members within the domestic violence community? Christine?
Just come to the microphone and we can't.
I really do have a very large voice.
No, the TV won't pick it up.
Yeah.
You need to be on the air.
Oh, on the air, great.
Shock Table wants to hear you.
IWC of Canada was part of a national survey last year that was looking at the impact of violence on women, what women were expecting when they're coming to shelters, and a few things were found. Women's emergency shelters are actually the option for women that have no options. This is the last resort. Of the nearly 400 women that were surveyed, over 77% were at severe to extreme risk of homicide in their intimate partner relationship. When all of these stats were brought to, actually, Parliament Hill, we were in the press gallery, and we gave the report. We went out afterwards, and we did some lobbying with, I think, 17 or 18 MPs, and we went, you know, together to do this, to ask for a national strategy to stop violence against women. We received a fairly lukewarm reception, because the image is that women have equality in the country, which, of course, has been recently in the news with Status of Women, and now if you get money from them, you can't lobby or advocate for changes. But we do have some critical needs. The women we're seeing at our shelter, about 50% are in that severe to extreme risk of homicide, and we are turning them away in droves. In August, we turned away 125 women and 135 children just that month. I think part of it also goes, and Debbie, I think, has been very polite, part of it does go to political will on if this is going to be an issue that we're going to keep in the face of our public to say we need to make some changes. It's more than just providing a shelter, which is an interim stopgap for women if they are in an abusive relationship. And many go back to that relationship because they do have hope that the relationship will change. They do love their partner. They want to keep their families together just like anybody else would. But we don't have second stage housing. We can't get that funded in this province. And studies have shown you need 3 second stage housing beds for every 1 emergency bed that you have for women. Right now we have 0 in the city of Lethbridge. So there's no place to go. Housing is short. Another social program that's being cut in this country has to do with social housing. All of these link together. This is not one ministry's response. It's Children's Services that's leading the way in this province. It's not the other ministries. And there needs to be cross-ministerial connection and commitment to this issue because it impacts health, it impacts education, it impacts Children's Services, it impacts our welfare system and housing and all the rest of it. So that's more where we need to go.
Lorraine, did you want to speak as well? Come on up.
You go ask a question.
Thank you, ma'am. John Boris is my name. I've been here many, many times, as many of you know, and I've never dared to read. Ask the question I'm going to ask now, in public.
Didn't hear you, John.
I'm going to ask the question now. I've never really had the guts to get up and speak about that in front of people in the public like this. And this is about declaring yourself to be a conscientious objector. No killing. However, we turn our TV on, we hear the radio, heroes, decorated. Yes, our son wanted always to be in police. You're in the police department. You're closer than a lot of us are. But control, that's violence. You've got to control them. But how far do you go? And those are... I wonder if you'd care to comment.
John, if I can... Paraphrase your question.
What is reasonable? In control?
It's the most litigious word in the English language.
It was interesting in going a little bit about your sideways with your question. At our table, we had a discussion about all of us at some time were probably verbally abusive. All of us at one time probably reacted and maybe pushed when we shouldn't have pushed or shoved when we shouldn't have shoved. And after all, we are humans. But when it is an everyday occurrence and when it is to such an effect that you can't sleep, or you have to, I've heard of cases where you've had to lock yourself in the closet in order to be protective. That's when it's not reasonable. So it's a matter of when the behavior is so damaging to the joy of everyday life that it's unreasonable. Does that help you?
How far is that? Every one of us are one-on-one with the reasoning.
Yeah. It's you know, it's interesting. Homefront Calgary produced a video 2 years ago to create awareness in Alberta about the issue of domestic violence. And in that video, it was a 5-minute clip. It showed a gentleman and sitting at a restaurant with two children, and the waitress came along and accidentally spilled some coffee on him. And the gentleman jumped up, grabbed her by the throat, poured hot coffee on her, and yelled at her, you know, a whole bunch of obscenities. And the question was, we wouldn't put up with this in public, so why do we let it happen at home? Now, that video got banned. They would not show that. Canadian television series, or the persons responsible for broadcasting, said it was too offensive. And yet, we turn on our television any time of the day, and you see all kinds of killing and beating, and yet when we try to deal with it and relate it back to domestic violence, it's banned. So I don't really know if I have an answer for your question, John, but it was a good one.
Howard, other people have questions,
actually.
Howard.
No. No. Good man, in control of everything. That's wrong. We got to stop it.
Okay, you sit down.
I agree, Howard.
Yes, Lorraine, you wanted to comment on the last, this is Lorraine Stewart from the Lethbridge victim.
They're not in control in my...
I just want to make a comment to you in terms of what Deb's been talking about, the campaign this year that the government's putting on about ending violence. I think many of us think that the police are going to do something about this issue, that it's our job. What I want you to know is less than 6% of women who are assaulted in their homes come to the police. Less than 6%. And why do you think that is? That is because the criminal legal system does not hold offenders accountable. Now, what can you do? You can lobby so that offenders who are found guilty of this crime are held accountable, and then that there's treatment for them or support for them after the fact as well. As well as services, of course, for the women and children, which you've already heard us talking about. But I always worry that people look at the police and think that they're supposed to take care of everything, when in fact only 6% come and see us at all. And part of the reason for that is shame. Our community does not support women very easily. We have a lot of judgment and very few resources. So I just ask you all to look at yourselves and join in this campaign of ending the silence.
Bob Anderson. Debbie, I clearly feel that you spoke from your heart. And speaking from your heart, I think you touched quite a few other hearts, because you're dealing with something that's incredibly important. But to be specific, you have identified, at least for me, one of the major problems is political will, and that's something we can all work on if we want to. Go to political meetings and just speak up. But the other thing that you didn't, for me, get into is the role of poverty. To what extent do you see that as a context for what goes on? Could you comment a little bit on that, please?
Very good question. And yes, poverty plays a huge role. A lot of victims stay because they are unskilled and they cannot afford housing. They cannot afford child care. When you're working for minimum wage, and childcare is more than what you make, it's hard to leave. So poverty is a huge issue. Diane, I'm going to get you to comment on some of the issues because you, second stage housing is an issue that you like to speak about. I know you have a strong heart for that. So yes, poverty contributes by involves no place to live, no place to go, no skills, no child care, no housing, no, food.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. It's a trap. And then you want me to report my only means of finances. And then what if A goes to jail? Then what do I have? So, Diane, would you like to comment on some of the housing issues we have in our community? Or some of the work that you do around that issue? Some of the work that we're doing right now with Social Housing in Action is being able to respond to some of the affordable housing needs in our community, but also provincially and nationally. Our vacancy rate right now is 0.5%. A healthy vacancy rate for good turnover is between 3.5 and 4. So we just don't have available, affordable, or housing, let alone it being affordable. There are many barriers for women leaving relationships to find that next piece or that affordability. So when we have lack of affordable housing stock, and probably not a very secure place, for people to live as they leave the shelter, that's one of our priorities right now is to look at options for second stage housing, which provides some security, but also something that's affordable for women and their children to live in as they're making that transition into a new lifestyle.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Diane.
One of the comments that I have heard from a victim of abuse was she was asked why she didn't leave and, if she was so afraid. She says, it's better to be afraid and know where he's at than be afraid and not know where he's at. Okay.
Judy Reynolds, I'm with the Chinook Health Region Family Health Home Visitation First Steps Program. Sorry. I am myself a victim of family and domestic violence for most of my life. I deal with it every day that I work with my clients. I've made changes in my life, and I've been hopefully helping my clients, and the same with the rest of our staff. And it's very frustrating to not have the housing for our clients, the places at the Y for them to go, being turned away, and they continually have to go back to the relationships, even though they're ready to make those changes, because we just don't have the resources here in Lethbridge.
Very good comments. Thank you.
I'll wait for time. I'm Susan Giffen, and my question is, where are the men? Like I'm seeing you, and I see Diane and Christine Casey and the lady that was just here. They're all women working in this area. Are there any men trying to help with housing or struggling with these issues?
Absolutely. We have some very good, strong supporters in our community. We have the police department has a special investigative services in which Sergeant Jamie Fisher does the investigation. Staff Sergeant Carl Melke coordinates, and Inspector Cove, and they review these cases and they make sure that they are doing their share. We have Robert Coleman, who is the head of the prosecutor's department here in Lethbridge, and they are continuously improving the court system. In fact, we have a domestic violence court specifically for Lethbridge, where on Tuesdays the court is directed only to domestic violence case in order to expedite the process instead of going through the systems. So I'm trying to think of, there's just so many, Yes, there's There's lots of men. There's the campaign. It's called the White Ribbon Campaign, where men's group are starting to speak out against the violence. But I still don't think they speak out enough. So I'm going to say we have those people that speak out within their job description, because they're passionate about their job. But I would love for every man in this room write a letter of support to say, you know, we need to stop the violence against women and children. It's our future.
Diane. Hello, I'm Diane Poynter. I kind of missed the first couple of questions, but I'm wondering, the contributing factors towards violence, I'm thinking of, again, is poverty a contributing factor at all towards violence? And what about drug use and alcohol use and gambling and all those other vices that take place in our society?
Oh, we might as well just give up, eh? You're absolutely right. There's lots of contributing factors. There's lots of drug abuse and alcohol abuse, substance dependency in some of these families, but not all of them. There is also lots of financial difficulties in these families, but not all of them. There is lots of, let me think of some of the contributing factors. It's history. Their family histories. You know, we had a discussion at our table of, you know, why aren't the kids speaking up about it? Because the kids don't know. I mean, it's normal to them. They have, recent studies show how they're affected. They even have, I don't have the stats here or the exact numbers, but they're showing that children that have been exposed to domestic violence pre-age 5 have smaller brains to then kids that aren't exposed. I mean, this is all recent information that's coming out, and there's just so many effects. Religious beliefs affect the outcomes in some families. Cultural beliefs, gender beliefs, society judgment, fear, shame, guilt. I mean, it's so huge. It's like, you know, it's a real true picture. If you drop the stone in the water, it just ripples and ripples and ripples, and you'll find something. And it's you know, it's overwhelming sometimes. But if we give up, then what do we have? So we keep fighting in our little tiny portion of the world, and we keep advocating, and we keep going on, and we keep demanding more issues being dealt with. And I think we'll get there. It's not going to happen overnight, you know. Every time we get new information, we've got another finger to put in the dike because something else has come our way. But it's forums like this. It's public awareness. It's speaking up. It's simple things like, don't turn your back when you hear your neighbors fighting and you suspect that something's going on. You might want to ask sometimes if, you know, is there anything that you can do for that coworker that's always, you know, just not quite herself or himself.
Thank you for your presentation. Yeah, I'm sort of heading in the direction that you spoke of just more recently, and oh, sorry. Right here, we've been talking about mics at the back. We're talking about intervention after the fact, and I guess my mind is going to the fact that family violence can often be, it's a cyclical thing. I mean, children see, they learn behaviors that are inappropriate, and I'm sure nobody wants to grow up to be an abuser. But it happens, and I'm wondering, and I'm sort of out of the loop relative to some of the programs, but in school, if one were to be ask a child, have you ever seen, you know, I guess you've got to, there's the public, you've got to be careful about the privacy thing, but it seems to me also that somehow young men have to be made aware that they could well become abusers if they've been witness to abuse. And I do know of a situation where a father had been witness to abuse, and he was very standoffish in terms of any kind of discipline to the children because he himself had seen abuse. And he was very, very cautious that this cycle would be broken. And indeed it was. So it's just been going through my mind. I guess it's not a question,
but it's a good observation.
Some people who have witnessed domestic violence become abusers. Some don't. I don't think there's really anybody knows why. Why would one person in the family become an abuser and his brother who saw the same situation not be an abuser? Don't know. Don't have those answers. I don't think there's any research out there that can give you a real direct answer. Does anybody from the field know of anything? Michelle, is there anything on that? Or Colleen? Colleen might want to make a comment on that. Colleen does a lot of work with abusers.
I work at Lethbridge Family Services. I'm the director of the Counseling, Outreach, and Education Department. I'm also a psychologist. Can you hear okay? Closer? Okay. Is that better? That's better. I'd just like to make a comment that most children who are exposed to family violence do not become abusers. Most do not. But most abusers, there's a large percentage that have experienced either neglect or abuse or some other, negative type of abuse. So most kids don't become abusers, but those that do become abusers, a lot of them have been abused. So there's a little bit of a difference there. So there's not a direct linear correlation that if you've been abused that you're going to become an abuser. That's not true.
Very good, thank you. I clarified.
I thought it's higher than 50%.
My name is Byron Palmer. My question is, we heard quite a little bit during these discussions about political will. And considering the importance of this meeting and the interesting information that has been generated, may I invite you to invite us to determine how many aldermen are here at this meeting?
Byron.
Other questions?
Thank you.
My name is Henry Heinen, and I'm interested in you expounding a little bit more about women's shelters availability on the two large reserves, which are right in our backyard, and also the Aboriginal population in the city as to what they access in terms of the stats, 87%, that I heard that have, say, deal with abuse. Maybe you don't know, but I'm interested because it's a huge population.
No direct shelter on the reserves. The YWCA here in Lethbridge is Lethbridge and District, and I'm going to ask Christine Casey to comment on the stats for that because that's her area. The question was, Christine, about how many, what is the percentage of Aboriginal youth in your organization?
YWCA Harbour House, we have about 60% Aboriginal women that access the service. Of that, however, a great many are from Lethbridge and immediate area. The Piikani Nation tends to go towards the Pincher Creek Women's Emergency Shelter. Blood Reserve will come into Harbour House as well. But on reserve, there's no Women's Emergency Shelter that's operating. However, last week, I believe it was, that INAC, Indian and Northern Affairs, did give a $6 million influx this year only to on-reserve shelters. Now, there are a number in the province of Alberta. There's 40 shelters all told. About 5 of those are on-reserve shelters, and they get a pittance of money compared to Alberta government-run shelters and have a lot of, I guess, issues that they have to deal with. So this is probably welcome to them, but again, it's not sustainable. So I don't know if that helps. Okay.
Thank you. I've also been able to
with Pearl Longtime Squirrel, who is the coordinator of domestic violence programs out on, is it Piikani? Blood, sorry. And I really enjoyed working with her because her program is, they recognize the risk on their community or in their community, and they do take some very proactive steps. So they've got some good programs on the go. But it's still, is it enough? the resources are less than the demand.
Other questions?
Cheryl. Yes, I'm Cheryl Bradley, and I'm interested in knowing, you were saying that we need to direct more resources, and I'm assuming, I mean, some of that is community awareness and just community activism, but some of it is financial, I'm assuming, need more financial resources, and we've talked about social housing and shelters. What level of government has responsibility for resourcing this?
Yeah, Canadian, you know, the national, there is a, if you go online, you can look at what the strategic plan for the national crime prevention and what Canada's plan is for battling domestic violence. Provincially, we have all, it's very good in the last couple of years, the cross-ministry approach where you have several of the ministry, mainly Child and Family Services, Health Services, and the judicial system, Solicitor General, working together to try and coordinate some of the funding and the responsibilities. Municipally, one of those, here in town, we have some spokespersons that are getting involved in the issue. So all levels of government have some commitment, but as we're recognizing that it's the research shows that it's such a larger problem than we ever thought of. There's still needs for more. There's more and more funding for research. I think one of the keys, and I'm going to get Michelle Montgomery up here no matter how hard I try. maybe you could speak a little bit about how the importance of intervention with children is one of the strategies that the Alberta Children's Services is using. It's to me, it's a very strong component of the strategy.
I am the Regional Prevention of Family Violence and Bullying Coordinator for Child and Family Services in the Lethbridge region.